Cause everything you say is life to me. Well, good morning. My name is Jim Owens. I'm the campus pastor here in Manhasset, and we are thrilled that you are here with us this morning, and especially you fathers, we're thankful that you are here with us. And Pastor Henry chose this passage for Father's Day, and you'll see why. It is a story that has to do with a father, and it's called The Prodigal Son. Some people know it as that name. Some people know it as the Lost Son. And my preferred name for it is The Lost Sons, the two lost sons. And so we're going to be talking about this parable today. And I want to set it up for you before we see a video. And now, just remember, we have our kids in the room here, and so because it's Family Sunday, so kids, are you here? You have any kids here? So yeah, all right. So I know the kids are thinking that, hey, I got this card, and it says that there is free ice cream after the service. And so I just want to let you know that I'm going to be torturing you for the next 40 minutes or so until that ice cream comes. So the sad thing is you have to listen to me for the next, you know, few minutes here until you get the ice cream. But it's going to be okay. You are going to get the ice cream. He's not going to go away. Just want you to not worry about that. Okay? So the parable of the lost son is actually part of a few parables that Jesus is telling the folks that are listening to him. He told them a story about the lost coin that the woman found, and she was really happy when she found it. And he told about the lost sheep. He left the 99, and he went and found the one. He was really happy about that. This one is similar in some ways. It's the lost sons, and he has a celebration too. So there's some similarities there. And I want you to know who he was talking to. So the way this worked was he's at a dinner that the Pharisee is having, and there's Pharisees. Now these are like the religious leaders, like priests and whatnot, lawgivers and interpreting the law. They are there. And also the tax collectors and the sinners. They're both in there. So he has a little lesson for them. And so what Jesus does is rather than just saying the lesson, he tells a story. And so this is the story that he tells. So we have a little video that shares the story that we're going to be talking about today. Check it out.
Jesus taught everyone about God's love. All kinds of people would come to hear Jesus speak, including tax collectors and people who made bad choices. This made the Pharisees and Jewish leaders mad.
Ugh, yuck.
They didn't think that Jesus should be around these kind of people. So Jesus told them this story. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father,
excuse me?
I want my share of your estate now, before you die.
Okay.
So his father agreed and gave his son his inheritance.
Woo-hoo!
A few days later, this younger son packed all his belongings.
See ya!
And moved to a distant land. And there he wasted all his money in wild living.
Huh?
About the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land.
Aw, man!
And he began to starve.
Hey, you!
He convinced a local farmer to hire him.
Dingo!
And the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the food he was feeding the pigs looked good to him. But no one gave him anything. Finally, he said to himself, at home, even the servants have food enough to spare. And here I'm dying of hunger.
I know.
I will go home to my father and apologize and ask him to take me on as a servant. So he returned home to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son.
Son!
His son said to him, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. But his father said to the servants, Quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet, and kill the calf we have been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and now has returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found. So the party began. Meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working. When he returned home, he heard music and dancing in the house.
Huh? Hey, you!
And he asked one of the servants what was going on. Your brother is back, he was told, and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his safe return.
Woohoo! All right! Party time! All right! Yahoo!
The older brother was angry and wouldn't go in. His father came out and begged him.
Ah, oh man!
But he replied, All these years I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. And in all that time you never gave me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back after wasting your money, you celebrate by giving him a great feast. His father said to him, Look, dear son, you have always stayed by me, and everything I have is yours. We had to celebrate this happy day, for your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, but now he is found.
Okay, so that is the story. And I wanted to let you know that one of the things that I did in researching this, I used two books that were really, really helpful for me. And I thought I would let you know about them in case you want to buy them and check them out. One is called The Return of the Prodigal Son by Henry Nouwen. And the other is The Prodigal God by Tim Keller. You can check those out on your own. But in this passage, there are three main characters. And in a parable, generally, each main character has a point. So we're going to talk about each of these characters. And the first one is the young son. And he represents the sinners and the tax collectors in the group. Then there's the elder son, who represents the Pharisees and the teachers of the law that were in that party that they were at. Then there's the father. And the father represents God. So those are the three main folks in this story. And you'll see, this is a picture by Rembrandt, and it shows the father caressing the younger son, hugging him, and then the elder son looking down on both of them in this picture. And we'll refer to that picture again, but I wanted to give you a visual image of what it may have looked like in that scene. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about the younger son. So the younger son, remember, represents the tax collectors and what they call the sinners. Now, I want to just talk a little bit about tax collectors. So these are not folks, maybe we think of the IRS, they're sitting in a cubicle and they're sending emails and they're writing letters that say, hey, you really should pay your taxes. You know, you really need to pay them or we're going to charge you a penalty. It's not that kind of tax collector. Now, just a little quick story. I had a phone call. This was a number of months ago that someone called and they said, we're from the IRS and you are back on your taxes. You owe back taxes and you owe a lot of money. And because of that, we're going to come. We're sending people over and they're going to arrest your wife. And so I'm listening to this, and then, you know, light bulb kind of goes off, and I start crying hysterically on the phone. No, you can't do that. I love my wife. I have four kids. What am I going to do without my wife? I'm just like totally going off on this guy. And he's like, and then I say, oh, can I can I give you a credit card number? You want a credit card number? I'll give it to you. I just don't want my wife to go. And some, you know. And he says, no, that's okay. We just wanted to let you know that they're coming to get her tonight. Okay, I'll get her ready. She never went. It was fine. She's still here. Okay. So, but these tax collectors were different. So these tax collectors, they were actually Jewish people that were living in their community. And when the Romans came and occupied, what they wanted to get the tax money from the Jews. So they figured it's better if a Jew asks them than if we ask them. So they recruited a few people who would be tax collectors. And they also gave them some nice, stout Roman soldiers to go along with them to collect the taxes. And so this is the way it worked. So a tax collector would go out, go to a home of a neighbor, someone in their community, and they would say, maybe the Romans say, you need to get $1,000 from this guy. So they'll walk in and they'll say, hi, you owe the Roman government $2,000. And they'll say, no, I'm not going to pay those evil occupiers. And then the soldiers come up and they point the spears at them and they say, okay. And they give them $2,000. But the Romans only wanted $1,000, right? So kids, do the math. How much did they get to put in their pocket? $1,000 in their pocket. That's great, right? No wonder the tax collectors got really rich. These are really wealthy folks. And they were despised. So not only are they traitors, they're thieves. So these were despised people. And Jesus is welcoming them to have dinner with them. So, and then there's the sinners. Now these would be, you know, liars, people doing bad things to themselves and to other people, thugs, you know, cheats, just people that you don't want to have anything to do with. So that's who's there. Now, the modern version might be like a drug dealer. Okay, so a drug dealer goes into a community and they sell drugs to their friends, their neighbors, their community, and it poisons them, ruins their lives, ruins the community, and they're making tons of money. Tons of cash. It's the same kind of idea. So you get the picture of what how the Pharisees are looking at these people and who these people are that Jesus is talking to. Remember, it's one story for all of these people in the room. So when we look at this passage, it says, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between him. So he says, give me my one-third of the inheritance that I'm going to get when you pass away, when you die. Because the older son gets two-thirds. So basically what he's saying is, Dad, you know what? I wish you were dead. Happy Father's Day, by the way. I wish you were dead because you know what? If you were dead, then I would get my money and then I could go do what I want to do. So the father does something that would shock those that are listening to Jesus' story. The father in this story goes and sells the land, sells a third of the land. Now, because he needs cash, right? So when he sells the land, this is like a very humiliating thing to do. This is a humbling thing. This is a radical thing to do, to sell the land, because the land is no longer part of the family. And the land, that's how you establish your wealth. That's what creates your standing in the community, is your land. So when the father has to sell the land, it's a shaming thing. The community around him would be like, what are you doing? You're ruining your family. But he does it. He goes ahead and gives him the land. He gives him the cash from the sale of the land. So here's what happens after this. He says, not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, and he set off for a distant country. And there he squandered his wealth in wild living. Now, the first thing that we see about the younger son is we see that he is self-serving. He's really about himself. And I'm wondering, what was it inside of the younger son that caused him to do this? Was he thinking, hey, there's a big old world out there, and I'm stuck here, and I'm wondering what it's all about? And then he says, I can't do it. I can't explore the world here. I got to go out. So that's why he asked for the money. Or maybe he's feeling like there's just empty. He's inside. He's purposeless. Like he just feels like, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm about. I just want to go out and find out who I am. Or maybe he's just feeling like, you know what? I've got things I want to do, and I know my dad won't approve of them. I know this community won't approve of them. So I just got to go out. I just got to do it because I feel this thing that's it's unquenchable, this thirst that I have, and I've got to go after it. We don't exactly know, but there's all kinds of things that are causing him to leave his country. He isolates himself. He goes far, far away. Nobody knows him. Now, when we look at this this passage, it says he spends all his money on wild living. Now, this is where the term prodigal, the prodigal son, comes from. Because prodigal means excessive spending. You're spending your money recklessly, doing things on a lavish scale. So I was thinking that this little video clip might give a little feel for maybe the kind of party that the young son wanted to throw. Check this out. Oh yeah, they're having fun. They're having a lot of fun. And if you ask them in that middle, are you having a great time? You'll say, yeah, I am totally having a great time. This is awesome. But you know what? This is the kind of thing that he was going after. And he was trying to fill himself up to help fill something that was missing inside of him. And I think what he was looking for, he was looking for friends. He was looking for some kind of community that would be really fun. But you know what? I think as we look later in the passage, it was slowly destroying him. It was eating him away. Once his money was gone, what happened to his friends? Gone. They were nowhere to be found. No one cared about him. And here's some things that I see in the young son. Number one, He isolates himself, right? He goes to that faraway country. No one knows him. He's in constant activity. He's just doing stuff. He's distracting himself from the pain. You know, activity will help distract us. He numbs his pain with, you know, the sensory feelings. You know, the sensual pleasures that he has. It's numbing the pain that he has deep inside of him. He feels lonely. He's without purpose. He's empty. He is really empty. And we see that in this passage here. It says, after he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. The second thing about the younger son, he ended up being self-destructive. You know, he had sort of his feast, and then now he's feasting with the pigs, right? And he's not even getting anything there. It's self-destructive. If we ever try to numb the pain of our life with things, or we try to numb the pain or ignore what's going on in our life with things and stuff, we use We can use relationships or alcohol or drugs or any sensual pleasures, just entertainment, even working out in the gym, good stuff, working really hard, seeing that bank account going up, our career, adventure. All these things can just be things that we're using to distract the emptiness that we have inside of us. If you've ever run after things just to help yourself feel better, I have. I remember in a period when I was in college. I was in my second senior year, which should tell you a little something. And I received in computer science an internship for this first semester of this year. And so I was really excited about it. It was in Pittsburgh. I didn't know anyone. It was going to be a new adventure. It was like a whole new thing for me. And I was in a state where I was feeling like, you know what? There is a big world out there. I wonder what it is. I want to experience some things that I haven't experienced before. I felt sort of confined. I felt like, you know what? I've been on this treadmill a little too long, and I want to do something different. And, you know, I was a Christian, and I had had a devotional life where I was reading the Bible, I was praying, and I was going to church, I was doing all those things, and I thought, I'm going to a new place, kind of like another country. And you know what? I stopped doing those things. Not praying, not reading the Bible, no fellowship, didn't go to church. And I got involved in other things. I joined a theater group with some folks that were really fun and cool and had a lot of fun. And because I knew, hey, I am totally anonymous here, I took a ballet class, which was very, very unusual for me. And I was awful. But I didn't wear tights. I just want you to know that. I did not wear tights. But I thought, why not? Who knows? And so I'm in this place, and I had a couple of relationships that were going, that were not good for me. They were bad, but I didn't care. And I mentioned a couple, which means more than one, which is not a good idea. And that was bad for me. But I was like the younger son. I felt it. And I thought it was filling something up. But then, you know, things started to crash around me. I got mono, okay? If you ever had mono, you're just like laid out flat, sleeping 15, 16 hours a day for weeks on end. And I'm just like flat out. My relationships sadly ended. Bad, nasty things. It just broke my heart. It was not good. And I just felt like my whole life was crumbling. I had to leave school because I was so sick. And I remember being looking at the mirror, because I had to go back home, and looking in the mirror and saying, what have you become? Like, what was that all about? Where were you going, Jim? You okay? You done now, Jim? That's kind of where I was. Well, the younger son gets there too. It says, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of the father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So he got up and he went to his father. He decides to humble himself and go back to the father. He's hit bottom. And I asked someone about hitting bottom. And I said, what does it mean to you to hit bottom? And she said, you know, when you decide to change direction, that's when you've hit bottom. And you look up and you say, I need to change direction. That's when you hit bottom. Because bottom is bottomless until we turn. So, in the Jewish culture, what would have happened to the son normally is the father would have put together a legal document that would have said, you are now cut off. You are no longer part of this family. You are dead to us. You no longer exist. You will never be a part of our family again. Ever. It's a legal document. And the son reasonably assumes that that's what happened. The son realizes that he is forever cut off. He will never experience that feast again. He will never be a part of the family again. So the son is self-condemning. He condemns himself because he knows he cannot earn his way back. Because here, remember, what he's thinking is, I've just lost hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe millions of dollars, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to ask the father for a minimum wage job to try and earn my way back. That ain't happening, right? He's never going to make that back. But he knows that, but he's still saying, maybe I can earn myself a place on the fringe so that I can at least eat. I'll never be in the inside, but I'll be on the fringe. But I got to earn my way back in. That's what he's saying. So now we're going to move to the father. What does the father do? The father says, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son and threw his arms around him and kissed him. You see that? He had compassion for him. He had that love for him. He knew what was inside of the younger son, and he forgave him, and he loved him, and he wanted to help him with that pain. So when he runs to him, it's another shameful thing that the father has to do. He has to hooch up his garment because he's going to run. And when he does that, he exposes his legs, which at that time, the Pharisees would have been like, oh my gosh, no, he's not doing that too, is he? And he starts running, which is another thing a dignified landowner would never do in that culture. So he is just totally abandoned for his son because he loves his son. He says, I don't care what other people think. I'm going to humiliate myself, but I love him. And he runs to the son and he hugs him. And then the son says, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. And then look what happens. The father says, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. So first, the father is compassionate. The second thing is that he has a gracious, lavish love for this son. Now, the word in that passage just says, quick, right? He doesn't even listen to the son's full confession. He just says, quick, bring me the robe. Bring me the ring. You know what that tells me? He's not putting his son on a probation period. He's not saying, let's see. Okay, let's give this a few months and see how he turns out. See if he's really turned around or if he's the same guy who wanted me dead. He doesn't, does he? He just says, right now you're back in the family. This moment. And so he puts the robe on. You know what the best robe would have been in his household? It would have been the father's robe. He puts the father's robe on him. He puts a ring on him. That means he's now a son, a full son, full inheritance, everything. He gets it all back. Isn't that amazing? He's a part of the family again. Amazing. It's shocking. I think it's a little excessive. Don't you think that what the father's doing is a little excessive? It's a little over the top, don't you think? That's the idea of the prodigal, right? It's excessive. It's lavish. It's over the top. That's what the father does for the son. And what he does, he throws this party. And the fatted calf is a part of it. Now, the fatted calf, that was reserved for, like, if someone had a big wedding or if, like, the governor came or some dignitary came. This was like, you do not do this for just anyone. This is not like, oh, we'll just get another fatted calf. No, this takes a long, long time to fatten up the calf to feed everybody. So it's a big deal. And he kills the fatted calf. He makes that sacrifice, this lavish sacrifice for the son for the feast. It's a lavish sacrifice for the feast. Isn't that amazing that he does that? And this is a party. You think that last party, the Gatsby party, was good? This is a huge party. Everybody is there. And you know what? This party was awesome for the young son. This was a great party. He had friends there that loved him and cared about him. And it was like everything was coming back. And he's part of this feast. And he's part of the family. And everything's good. And he loved it. So this party, the irony of it is he didn't spend a dime. He didn't spend a dime of his money, the younger son, on this party. It was all free. It was the gracious, lavish love of his father. His father paid dearly for this party. He paid nothing. And that's what grace is. Grace is that lavish thing that's done for us that we don't deserve. It's doing good to those that deserve, actually, the opposite, like the son, the young son does. So remember, there are two groups of people hearing this. One is the sinners and tax collectors, represented by the younger son. The other is the elder son, representing the Pharisees. So let's talk about the elder brother. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, "What was going on?" "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. He won't go to the feast. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered the father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you, never disobeyed your orders. You never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you're always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because your brother, this brother of yours, was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." See, the elder brother is self-righteous. He believes that I deserve that feast. I earned it. And so the elder brother represents the Pharisees, who believe they deserve to be in the kingdom of God because they've earned it. They've done all the right things. They've obeyed the laws. They've helped other people. They've done all the right things. Tax collectors don't deserve it, but I have earned it. And so there's some things that we see about the elder son, where we see that he is angry. It's one of the first things he says, right? It says that he is angry, right? And he refused to go in. And I'm going through this passage and I'm thinking, how have I been elder sonish? Sometimes I'm angry. I'm not even sure why I'm angry. But sometimes that anger can reveal that I'm being elder sonish. And anger sometimes comes when, like, why are they getting it? Because the younger son is getting the party that I deserve. Right? Can you understand, right, that the younger son's pretty ticked off about this? Makes sense, right? It makes sense to me that he would be upset. The other thing is that the elder son feels entitled. He's entitled to the good stuff. Why? Why do you think the elder son thinks he's entitled to the good stuff? Because he was good. Makes sense. I do the right thing. I'm faithful in my work. I do whatever. Then you give me the good stuff. And you know what, Father? That's our arrangement. We have a transactional relationship. I do good for you. Then you give me the good stuff. And that's easy for us to fall in. If we are faithful to our families, we're faithful to our work, we give, we do the right thing, we show up to church, we read our Bible, we do things for other people, we floss, we do all the right things, okay? We exercise, we eat the right foods, we eat vegetables. All this stuff is, yeah, I deserve to be healthy. I deserve the good stuff in life. And you know what, God? If you don't do that, you are unfair. The elder brother says it's not fair. And he accuses the father of being unfair because he's bargaining with God. He's got a transactional relationship. I earn it, you give it to me. Have we ever felt like that? We ever felt like, you know what? It's just not fair. I'm trying my best and I'm not getting any of the goods. That's a elder son-ish kind of attitude that we have. Maybe you know students that are cheating on the tests and they're getting away with it and they're getting a good grades. They get a better grade. They get an A. I get a B, and they cheated and they don't get caught. Nothing ever happens. Not fair. Maybe there's you know you have friends. If you're a young person, you have friends that are very flirtatious, and they're going after relationships, and they're kind of doing the wrong things, but they've got a boyfriend or they got a girlfriend, and you want a boyfriend or a girlfriend, but you don't want to do the wrong thing, but they're getting the boyfriends or girlfriends, and they're out on Saturday night having fun, and you're at home watching Netflix. Right? Not fair. Why is that? And the other thing is the father's a slave driver. He says, I've been slaving for you. The father is a slave driver. Maybe we feel like, you know what? I'm working hard. I'm doing all the right things. I'm wiped out. I don't have any more to give. God, you need to give me a break. The other thing, if you look at that picture, that in the Rembrandt picture, the elder son is looking down on the younger son and the father. The elder son is judgmental. And I, as I've been going through this, I'm realizing, oh, I'm thinking elder sonish things. I'm judgmental. I'm feeling, oh, why don't they do more? Gosh, they don't seem to be doing anything. I'm working really hard over here and they're not doing anything. I need help. Whatever. That's judgmental. You know, also, racism is a form of judgmentalism. It's an elder sonish thing. Sexism is an elder sonish thing. It comes out in lots of ways with people. So the father is also compassionate to the elder brother. He cares for him just like Jesus cares for the Pharisees. He says, you know what? I love you. But you can't earn your way into the feast. You can't earn your way in. That's not the way we work. I am gracious to you. I have the feast. You are invited, but you can't earn your way in, just like your brother can't earn your way in. So, as I ask the worship team to come up, here's what I'd like to present to you. There's a little bit of the elder son in us, and there's a little bit of the younger son in us. And God is saying, you know what? You can't earn your way back in to the family. Is by my grace, my lavish grace towards you. But we have to humble ourselves. We have to say, yeah, I've been doing that. I'm there. And like the younger son, we have to say, I give up. I want to be back in the family. I want to be a part of this feast. I want to be a part of the family again, or maybe for the first time. And so we're going to do something a little different. We have communion. We have two tables here and two tables in the back. And you're gonna come and serve yourself. But here's how we're gonna do it. You know, if you're feeling like the younger son, you want to come back. You've been going after things that are not working for you. You need to do that. Or you're feeling like the elder son. Like, I've been working hard. I'm having these attitudes. I'm feeling like I'm looking down on the father, that he's not fair. I need to change my way of operating with the Father and just accept His love. You can't do anything, you just have to receive it. So here's what I'd like to say. We have here communion. Now, communion is a feast. And just like the Father spent lavishly on this feast. It cost him everything. Jesus dying on the cross cost him everything. Communion represents that feast that we have to be part of the family. And this feast, the body and the blood of Jesus, is the most costly feast of all. So I want to invite you to be a part of this feast, to say, you know what, I want to be in this feast. Don't be like the elder brother, stand out. Don't be like the younger son, stay in a country far away. Come to the feast. And then we have a ring that you can put on your finger to say, you know what? Yeah, I want to be a part of the family of God. I'm in. I'm a full son, a full daughter in the kingdom of God. And so you can take the bread and then dip it in the cup and then take it right away and then just grab a ring and you can put it on to remind yourself that you're a son and daughter of the King. Let's continue with communion. You're all invited.